The number one element for success in this type of work has to be communication. If you are a good communicator, you're going to have success. And when I say good communicator, you need to be able to talk. You need to be able to deliver the message, but you also have to be a good listener.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm joined by Luis Delgado, president of PMCM at STV. Hey, Luis, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Eric. Good to see you.
Yes, always a pleasure and a lot of fun, but this is a little different than our normal interactions, right?
We've gotten used to this, right? It's been 4 years of this.
Well, let's just dive right in. So, you know, I always like to start shows with good news and gratitude. So I will ask you, is there any personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me or the audience?
I got to say that I'm grateful because I have two kids in college. My daughter's about to graduate. She'll graduate next month from Georgetown University in DC. So getting ready for graduation and all those kind of things. So it's fun. It's good. I'm happy that I don't have to pay more tuition. That's the gratitude part of it. Makes it fun. But it's what's interesting is when she was 12 or 13 years old, we went to campus. We went to that campus in DC. We walked the campus. And I remember her telling me, like, Dad, this is where I want to come for school. I thought 12-year-old is like, okay, yeah, sure. I said, okay, yeah, it's going to be hard work. It's going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to do to make this happen. And when she got accepted, I was like, oh, now it's real. But it's one of those kind of things that I truly enjoyed it. It means that we did something right with her. I'm grateful for all of that and looking forward to that graduation.
That is such a cool story. When she was 12, really, she just knew that's where she was going to go to school.
She said, this is where I want to come. She set her goal and eventually made it happen. So again, that to me was amazing.
That is really cool. And what did she study?
Business. I could not get her into construction. So she's going into business and eventually will work in consulting.
Well, what we do is a business too. Business skills are important.
We run businesses.
So good for her.
We run businesses. Yeah, and we do
exciting.
Consulting, basically. That's what we do, right? It's just in a different area.
Very cool. Congrats to you and the family and to her, especially. That sounds like a lot of fun. I always like to, on show days, my gratitude is always to the guests. So I know you've got a super busy schedule. Just want to thank you for taking the time to join us and talk with me a little bit. And then my other like gratitude, you know, and because this won't air for a few weeks, it might not be true the day the audience hears this, but the weather's like beautiful outside and it looks like we're about to start turning to spring. And I'm just really always grateful for that. Okay, cool. Well, sharing about your daughter is really nice. So we got to know a little bit about you, but tell me about yourself, like your background. Where did you grow up? Where do you go to school? Where do you live? Tell us a little bit your personal life if you want to share about your family anymore.
Okay. So I was born in Mexico, grew up in Mexico, and went to college at the Monterey Tech. I'm an architect by education. So I went to architecture school. What's interesting is that I graduated, I started working in Mexico. And economic crisis happen in third world countries that have a greater impact than they have here in, for example, in the United States. So I went through one of those, eventually lost my job, probably 1 year after graduating from school. I was getting ready to come to the United States for my master's. I was applying, I was getting everything ready. And I was going to do a master's in architecture. That's what I wanted to keep doing. At the time, my dad said, no way. You're gonna go, and if you're gonna do your master's, go do your master's in business. In any case, having that master's degree, that business degree, is going to allow you to do anything that you may need to do. You may not stay in construction, you may not stay in architecture, but you may go and work at a bank. You may not work someplace else, right? So, I did listen to that advice from my dad, and eventually went and did my MBA. And that was probably one of the best decisions that I ever made in my life, thanks to him. It actually led me on the path of going into more of program and construction management because of that. I understood the management piece of it. And I think one of the failures that we have in general about the engineering schools, in civil engineering in this case, or architecture schools, is that we seldomly get educated or seldomly get classes that have to do with how to even run a business, how to do financials, how to do accounting, any of those kind of things. And I remember sitting there at my MBA, and there were things that were totally new to me. And it's like the light bulb just kept going on. It's like, man, this is so great. Now I understand. And it allowed me to kind of be better at running projects, right? Every project is a small business. Basically, you're running a business for whoever owns the company or whoever's the owner of the project. And that was really instrumental in my upbringing because it was an important part of it. I did my master's at the University of Texas. And then eventually, I took that path forward. I kind of joke around that people ask me if I was ever registered as an architect, as an RA. So I say that I'm a recovering architect because I always stayed on the PMCM side of the business and grateful for that. Truly enjoyed my career. I've been in the United States for 25 years. Now I'm a U.S. citizen, grateful for that. But it's been a great journey. And I think that the one thing that I have to say, it's, as you talked about gratitude, I'm grateful that I got the opportunity to be here. I think that the fact that I'm doing what I'm doing right now, the position that I'm able to hold with STV, it's because I'm here. It's because I'm here in this country and it provided me with that opportunity to be able to do that. And I think that I've proven myself through that effort. And I've been surrounded by amazing people that have made this possible for me and my family.
That's awesome. And it's funny. So we just talked about your daughter went to school for business, but so did you in some ways.
I did. And it's understandable, but it was one of those kind of things that it's important to listen to people that have more experience than you. As we talked about later, probably about mentorship and those kind of things. Those are the kind of things that actually get you in a specific path. And that's important to understand that people have gone through this, understand it. You need to listen and learn from those experiences.
Well, so you mentioned you've been in the country 25 years. So, you know, with an MBA, you probably had your pick of maybe industries to choose. So what drew you to construction management? Like, why stay this path, you know, after you had been exposed to all the business stuff you saw?
Oh, there's no better place to be. I mean, I love it. I just love, when you think about it, I mean, everything that we've done throughout our careers, we're leaving a legacy behind. You walk by your city, by your town, or whatever you might have built a facility or a project, a street or whatever, you can look into it and figure out, okay, I had an influence in that happening. I'll tell you, one of my fondest stories is that I love building K-12 facilities. If I think about it, that's been the most grateful experience, having built a school in an underserved community. When you come and you go there for the first day of school, and then you see a six-year-old, a seven-year-old kid walking into the building for the first time, after they had a really bad school, a really bad experience before, and they come in for the first time and they see that big, bright, new building, and you see their smiles, you see their eyes light up. To me, that's just so amazing to see their faces. And then you see the parents right behind them and you see that big smile. I think you're making dreams happen for them. And if you can allow them to kind of start dreaming and you can allow them to start thinking that they can actually do more, they stay in school, eventually they become somebody that actually is going to do good for society. I think that just having that kind of influence, it's amazing. So that's why I love this industry. That's why I love what we do. And like a school, you can name any kind of facility, any kind of a project that we built out there. We're making communities better. We're making lives better for people. So I couldn't figure out that there's anything better to do. So I love the business element of what I do now. But I'm so proud of the work that my teams are doing across the country in building facilities, in bringing better infrastructure to cities. Again, it's awesome. And you have a legacy. You're leaving something behind, which is what we all want to do with our lives.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I've mentioned this in the show before, and you know my dad, you know him probably pretty well. And he raised this with that philosophy too, right? About what we do actually helps the public. It's for the public good. And there's nothing better than doing that. So I do tend to ask this question, and you kind of alluded to it, of like all of the projects in your career, Is there one that like particularly sticks out that you were just like so excited to be a part of, or you're particularly proud of? And maybe it was a K-12 facility, but maybe it was something else.
I don't know that I have a favorite, Derek. I've actually told my kids sometimes I'm a lot prouder of the work that has been done by teams of mine.
Yeah.
And the work that they've done, they executed, that rather than the ones that I've done myself. I don't know. It's just a different sense of pride that I have. It's almost like understanding that you saw the hard work, what people are doing. I love to talk about the work that we're doing as a company. And I love to talk about some of the projects that we've been able to build. But it's been mostly what my teams have done, more so than me personally. I don't know that I have one. But the story that I told you, it's one of those that has always stuck with me because it's been very meaningful. Like the same thing with when I have this conversation with my kids. When now, every time that I go to New York and I land at LaGuardia,
yeah,
it's a great sense of pride because I remember, you all remember LaGuardia a few years back. And now you see that airport. Now it's something that's a true testament of what New York City is about. It actually reflects New York City. You think about it, that could be the first impression that a person gets when they're visiting the city for the first time. And they're coming in, they're seeing that kind of airport. You can create excitement about it. So excited that our teams were part of it, that they were part, that they built the Port Authority side and the Delta side. So I see that and I get so proud to see those kind of things. And like that, there's a lot of other examples that I can give you across the country. It may be more sense of pride about what my teams do rather than myself.
Yeah, I love that. Leadership's a big part of like what we talk about. And a lot of that is living through your team, right? Making sure that they're being the best version of themselves because that helps you be the best version of yourself. Speaking of LaGuardia though, because I think that's an interesting project, depending on delivery method, right, utilized. What are your thoughts on that? Like for younger professionals coming into the industry, right? You're probably seeing many different delivery methods across the board, right? P3, design build, traditional design bid build. Where do you see the industry going and how do we stay aware of that? And not when I say we, I mean professionals, but also like younger professionals entering the industry, the actual clients, right? Because even for them, a lot of this is a change and a shift.
Funny that you asked that question. So this past Friday, I was in Seattle. I was there representing CMAA. As you know, I'm the chair for the national board with CMAA. And so I went there to represent CMAA in that event that they had at the Pacific Northwest chapter. And they were talking about some statistics that have been developed by CMAA. And oddly enough, interesting enough, it's that the survey data that we have is that still about 60% of all the projects that are getting executed are still design, bid, build. 60%
wow.
of all projects are still design, bid, build. That's still the majority of projects that are getting delivered in such a way. And then you go and the remaining 40%, it's a mix of different delivery methods, right? You can have your progressive design builds, your P3s, construction manager at risk, or CMGC, however you want to call it, depending on which part of the country you live in. But there's so many different elements of how we see project delivery. So to me, the advice that I would give someone is, as you're building your career, is try to get involved in different things throughout your career. Maybe work on a project that's maybe design bid build, figure out a way to get into the progressive design build project, figure out a way into CMGC or CM at risk. I think that's what's going to make you much more effective in your job, in the work that you do. And it's important to be able to understand all the things and all the variations and how that operates and how that works. And one of the things that I told my young, my emerging professionals here with an STV is that when you get that kind of exposure, try to find a way to get involved in negotiations. Try to find a way to get involved in change order negotiations, things of that nature, because those are the truly key elements of this process, because everything eventually comes back to collaboration and communication and how many people actually get involved in the discussion, who gets involved in the discussion and how fast you can actually move the process, right? But understanding all the details that come with determining how general conditions are going to be negotiated, how we're going to be negotiating a change order, how are you going to be negotiating time and extensions, on how are you going to get people or owner decisions made. Those are the key elements that are truly important to understand on delivery processes. So to me, that's what really matters. It's how you get those things developed and understood. And yes, you may not become an expert in any specific delivery method, but you understand it enough that you know where you need to be able to bring some of those resources to help you make the right decisions for your project, for your clients, for your community.
I didn't realize it was 60%. That's interesting.
It was a big number in my opinion, but that's what we got. That's the survey that CMAA collected. And yes, we're still doing a lot of the sign, bid, build.
It's probably true because you think about like municipalities or even like here in New York City, some of our agencies are just handcuffed. Like they can't do the other delivery methods even if they want to. That's probably true across other states and other jurisdictions as well. I like that advice. It's about experience and exposure, right? Go out and see every different method. And on the owner side, because I've had this conversation with some owners, I think what they're trying to do is just have the options available to them, right? Because if they're stuck in one, that's all they can get. And the flip of that is also true. Like if you get stuck saying, hey, we're going to do everything design build, that may not be the right answer for every project. Like each project has a delivery method that might be better suited for it. So to have the options is really what it comes down to.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
You were talking about how you would advise the younger professionals, right? Let's have them get more experience and see more delivery methods. Earlier when we were talking, you mentioned mentorship. So let's just roll the conversation right into mentorship. What mentorship have you received that's kind of guided your journey? And then what would you like to share maybe with the next generation?
So I'll tell you this. I don't believe that I truly ever had a mentor in my career, early part of my career. Most of the people that I relied on were usually my direct supervisors, people that I was working with. I was trying to get advice from them. I was trying to get feedback from them. But I probably made a mistake of not seeking or not looking for a couple of people that could have helped me better understand myself, my career path, and those kind of things. So that would be a piece of advice that I would give, especially the younger folks, is try to find those mentors and try to find those sponsors. And those are two different, those may be two different people or two different individuals. If I probably would have had more of a formal mentorship process or people that actually I collected or talked to about mentorship, I probably could have been able to find better ways of doing what I've been able to do it throughout my career. But that was just something that I was never advised on. So nobody ever told me, do this. That I will give people advice. Go find somebody that you can actually relate to, that you can talk to, and find ways of building that relationship. So a couple of years ago, because I truly believe in this, I ended up putting a mentor program within STV. We did not have a truly formal mentorship process within the company. Now we do. But I really wanted to make that happen. And I ended up having like 50 people from my team, 25 mentors, 25 mentees. We put them all together, and I was impressed with the quality of the people that helped me within the organization to put this together, the quality of the program that we ended up putting together. And some folks, even though it was 3-4 years ago that we did it, they're still talking, they're still together, they're still communicating. They may not be here anymore, but I know they're talking. So they were able to build that connection that I never had at that time in my life when I was in my 20s or early 30s. I did not have that connection. So I truly regret not having that yet. I did learn a lot from the people that I work with, my supervisors. And I even remember telling one of them at one point in time in my career, he was saying, hey, Luis, I love what you guys are doing, what you're doing. I love to see the way your career has progressed. And I told them very honestly, I said, hey, thank you for everything that you did for me, everything that you taught me, I said the good and the bad. And I remember Rick, he was like, the bad? I said, yeah. I said, I learned from everything that I saw. I told him, I said, I saw things that you did that were probably, I probably wouldn't have done it that way. And that was maybe because that's my values, that's my belief, that's the way that I don't think that's the way to lead or kind of make some of those decisions. But I learned from all of that. And he smiled and he said, well, I'm glad that I was able to be a positive influence on you. But it was kind of an interesting piece of it, right? Because that's the only way that I've been able to do that. I think that I'm getting to a point now that I've actually been getting much more in contact with more people that have actually helped me understand better my career and my career path moving forward. But it took me a while to get to that point. So my advice is try to find that individual. And as I mentioned, mentors, it's also good to find sponsors, specifically within your organizations. You need to find those people that are going to be the voice behind the closed doors, the room that you cannot get into some of those rooms because you're not at that level within your organization or your company. But find those people that actually get into those rooms that can actually speak in your behalf. Show them that you're able and capable of doing what you're doing. And those folks will speak on your behalf and will allow you to keep advancing and progressing. So I think that's one thing that I did do well. I did find those sponsors and I made sure that they knew what I was working on so they could speak on my behalf. And I think that's something that has allowed me to be able to kind of be able to progress throughout my career. So it's important to have those mentors and those sponsors, and they may not be the same individual. Again, you need to be able to understand how they may be able to help you. And again, listen, but don't take 100% of their advice. It's you for you to make your own decisions, to make your own opinions about what, how you want to grow your career, what leadership means, what communication means, and so on. Just build those areas of knowledge. And that's what I believe about mentorship.
A lot to talk about there. So love that you started a mentorship program, because I'm very big on mentorship. And I don't necessarily know that they were formal mentors, like you were saying, but I've had an incredible opportunity to meet and learn from many great people in this industry over my career. And it's been super helpful. So actually, we started a local CMAA mentor program for the New York chapter. So I spearheaded that. I started it and I've been running it for 2 years now. And it is really great, the feedback we get. People are like, hey, I'm just grateful to have a mentor because I was able to bounce an idea of my next job, or like I was able to get guidance on certification I need to get for this industry, or like really understand the difference between two roles I was weighing, or do I want to be in CM? Do I want to be in engineering? Right? Those are two different things. And I had a mentor that had experience on both sides and they were able to give me their feedback on it. But what you said that's so unique was you were like, also learn from the bad that you see, and to also make sure that you're not just taking what they say for granted, right? You have to internalize it. And does it match your values? And does it match the way you would want to do it? Just because they're your mentor doesn't make them right. That's more of a sounding board and a conversation that can be had. I think that's such good advice, because especially as younger professionals, all of us, right? We're so inclined to believe that everybody in the org chart above us just knows more than we do, right? They just do. That's why they're there. And that's why you're here. And that's how you're going to learn. But critical.
And I'll tell you what, one more thing, Eric, if you don't mind. One more thing is
that
you also have to identify and try to figure out what you're looking for in a mentor. So the only time in my career that I had an opportunity to have a formal mentorship program in the company that I was working for, I was somewhat ambitious and I said, you know what, I'm going to ask the company president to be my mentor. But I was probably 30 years old at the time, and what I was going through at the time, what I needed to learn at the time, did not have anything to do with what this individual was doing at that stage of his career. So it was truly a failure, in my opinion, to have that, to select that individual to be that mentor for me. And again, I don't think we were in the same place or the same spot. I couldn't really relate to a lot of things that he was talking to me at the time. So also make sure that you do that. I thought it was great for me to be able to get in front of the president of the company. And it might have been, I don't know. But from my perspective, it's like, I don't think I got much, if anything, out of it other than getting to be known by him. And which again, might have been good, but it was a mistake from my part. So it might have been better to find somebody maybe at middle management at the time to kind of figure out, how can I get there? That's what I'm looking for. That's my next kind of my next progression. I need to get there. Help me understand what I need to do. Instead, rather than think about getting to be the president of the group or the company, which I'm doing right now, but it wasn't because of that. It happened because of other things that happened throughout my career.
It took some steps. No, for sure. I think it's really great advice. You mentioned that STV has a formal mentoring program. So some other companies may also, right? Which I find sometimes younger professionals don't take advantage of all of the resources or opportunities companies may offer them. It's important to look at that. You know, I know you mentioned your time at CMA. Obviously, I'm heavily involved in CMA here at the local level and then also just supporting on the national level. So programs like the ELP program, right? And I don't know if you want to touch on it for a minute or so, but I think it'd be great for the audience to know in case they want to apply next year. You know, I sit on the board for selection. I think it's a great program. And
yeah, so at CMA, we have the Emerging Leaders Program. And we've done two cohorts since we started the program. And we end up selecting, when I say we, CMAA, end up selecting anywhere between 10 to 12 emerging leaders. And that's basically based on an application process. So if you're a young CM, a young PM, in your career? And when I say young, it doesn't have to be in your 20s. I mean, we've seen people that are well into their 30s in the program that are looking to get some support and some help to progress their career onto the next level. I'm very proud of what the program is doing and the success that I've seen through the program. So I've seen some of those folks come in for the first time when they're new to the program. And then I see their progression when they're making their presentation at the national conference and talking about the research that they did for CMAA. It's impressive to see those leaders on the stage, those young leaders on stage. And I've been supportive of it. We've had 3 STV employees through that program as well. And I've seen all of them, oddly enough, all 3 female have been part of the program. And I've seen their progression, all of them. And it's been impressive. It's been amazing because they've gotten an opportunity to kind of get out of their comfort zone, get out of their areas that they know of. And they've been on presentations in front of 500, 600 people at the time. So that's probably the first time they've done it in their lives. And to be there on stage and talking about the research that they've done, I think that alone kind of gets you to realize that you have that potential to do more. And it's been a great opportunity for us. We're looking at how we kind of reshape some of the things that we need to do for the next cohort. We want to do it again. And I know that Nick Soto and CMA are working on figuring out what's going to be the next progression of it. But it's a great program. And if you're interested, if you're young in your career and you're looking at it, look at it. Look at the application process. Get the commitment from your employer, from the company or the organization that you work for, and apply for it. I think it's worth doing it. The people that are there, I don't think they're high potential. I think they've shown that they have the potential and they're just taking it to the next level. It helps quite a bit. And I got to say, you learn quite a lot from them. I've had the opportunity to talk to them, have conversations. And once they get comfortable in the dialogue, it's been great to have that dialogue. And I truly believe in it. And when you talk about that piece of it, we learn from them and they're the future leaders of the association. I can see them being chapter leaders. I can see them being at the national board level. I can see them being part of national committees because they're now going to get involved. They've seen this. They've been exposed to the association, to the networking opportunities. I know they're going to stay there and they're going to continue building their career upon that.
I think the ELP program is great as well. And the takeaway here, I think, is get outside your comfort zone a little bit, right? Which the program forces people to do, which is important in your personal growth. And one of the things like Stephen Covey talks about in 7 Habits is sharpen the saw. And, you know, this is a way to be continuously improving and learning, sharpening that saw. So love the conversation around mentorship. I want to jump into a little bit of a different topic, but still, I think really good for the next generation. What do you think differentiates a good construction manager from like a truly great construction manager?
In my opinion, it's the number one element for success in this type of work has to be communication. If you are a good communicator, you're going to have success. And when I say good communicator, you need to be able to talk. You need to be able to deliver the message. But you also have to be a good listener, to be able to understand everybody, to be able to understand the needs, the challenges, the expectations of the people, the team that is working together, and how can you put all those things together for the team to be able to move forward. So yes, it has a lot to do with leadership, but if you're not a good communicator, a strong communicator, I don't think you're going to have the same level of success. That to me, I think it's been the biggest part of it. Throughout my career, one of the things that when I was executing projects, for some reason, I developed a reputation for being a fixer. And so meaning that they usually sent me to the projects that were either in trouble or where we needed to get something truly delivered in a different way. And being able to go there and have that first conversation with a client that already doesn't trust your company, that already doesn't trust the team that's there to deliver and so on. And then you come and say, I can do this, and this is what we're going to do, and how we're going to do it different. We're going to do it better. And that initial conversation, it's obviously a difficult one because it's hard to, through a conversation, to just say, oh, I trust you 100%. You have to build upon that trust. And it takes a while. But if you're true to yourself, you have that integrity in the communication, be able to communicate the good news and the bad news, and be able to say, but this is how we think we can take this and move forward. That makes it better. And I always tell people, it's like, I truly believe that risk, it's an opportunity. And if you don't take make it an opportunity and look at the proactive or the positive side of things, you're always going to get stuck in trouble, in problems. You need to find the way that you can leverage a situation that happened on your project and make things better. Maybe it becomes a lesson learned. That's fine. But you always have to find the positives in that, in the way that you approach this. Be proactive. And again, there's always something that you can make out of, even out of that situation, you can make something out of it that could eventually make you better, that can eventually make the project better, and that can build trust with a client in a much stronger way. So again, goes back to communication. Find a way to bring that message forward, to make it worthwhile. Find a way to inspire through communication the people that you work around with. And that's how you make that vision into reality with communication.
I had a feeling communication was going to be part of your answer, because when we first started, you said two key things, communication and collaboration, and communication is so important. I agree with you. You don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You don't have to be the best person in the room, but you've got to be honest and communicate openly, and you can get to solutions and you can bring in the right people to help when you need them too. So that's great. I have one more question before we go to the lightning round. So I wanted to ask you, looking ahead, looking to the future, what do you see as the next like major trend or shift coming to the construction management industry?
The one thing that I picked during my year as chair for CMAA, it's a grown emphasis in technology. We have to take ownership and we have to actually get involved and learn about technology. Even somebody less as old as me or people that are older than me, we need to learn about technology and figure out how we can do that. So everybody, it's obviously a word that everybody likes to hear, AI, and everybody's curious about what are we going to do with AI. But there, I think that AI is just one of those components. There's so many other things that have to do with technology that I think it's going to shift. It's going to change the way we deliver projects. It's going to change the way we manage construction. It's going to change the way we communicate and have those decision points made by owners and clients. So it has to be one of the things that you have to spend time with it. And I tell people, be curious, please explore. Do play with it. I mean, I've pretty much almost, I would say on a daily basis, I kind of do some things that I'm doing with my job that I kind of go back and say, okay, let me play with AI a little bit. I give myself a couple of minutes every day to do some of those kind of things. I've had a couple of presentations that I did, and eventually I did it through AI. I spent about 20 minutes doing a presentation via AI, and it actually came out really good. I was extremely surprised with it. Otherwise, it would have taken me probably a couple of hours to put those things together. But I'm playing with different tools. And doing that, think about it. Management information systems, everybody's doing that right now. Everybody's talking about dashboards. We're not doing enough on BIM or digital twin. We're not doing enough that we can actually kind of be able to bring everything into a single element, BDC. And so there's so many different things that are out there. Be curious, explore it, try to make those things move forward. And I think that once we get better educated about the benefits of technology, I think it's going to make us look better. Oh, we're always one of the industries that's for the furthest behind when it comes to technology. I went to a PMI conference last year because PMI is mostly technology companies nowadays. It used to be construction back in the day when I got my PMP. Now it's technology companies. So I went there to see what they're working on. And I was blown away because they're far ahead of what we're doing in construction. Yeah, not everything is one-to-one relatable to what we're working on, but they're really exploring the next frontier, the next thing that they need to do to make their jobs much more effective and much more efficient. I don't think we're doing enough in construction.
I would tend to agree with you. Just curiosity, AI tools, like what do you find yourself using the most? Is it ChatGPT or are you using something totally like something else?
I started playing with ChatGPT, right? That was the one that everybody's going to go, okay, let's do that.
Yeah.
So then you have, obviously, you have Copilot, you have Gemini. I've been playing lately with Notebook LM. I actually started using the PMI AI application. They have their own, which actually brings a lot of the material forward. So I've been kind of exploring around, doing different things, and there's just kind of keep looking for it. There's things that are out there. They're pretty cool. And again, emails, you may even just look at an email that you want to create that wanted to sound different. Play with it on AI. When you put it in and when you get out, it's like, oh, it's actually better. It actually looks better. So again, it's just curiosity. That's the most important thing. Stay curious. Try to find better ways of doing your job and promote that curiosity across the board and just get that imagination flowing.
I love the be curious. I think it's so important in everything we do. Very cool. Notebook LM. Out of all the ones you listed, that was the only one I was not familiar with. I'm going to look it up later. But
look it up. And cool. You can actually do a podcast with a notebook, and if you find a way to do it. So now you're doing a podcast. The application allows you to kind of do that within yourself.
Very cool. Yeah, I'll definitely check that out. So, all right, I want to jump into our lightning round. So these are four random questions just to get to know you a little bit better. First thing that comes to mind when I ask you, first one, do you cook? I guess is the question.
Nope.
No.
Not good
all
at
right,
cooking.
I'm going to skip that one then. You have any hidden talents?
They're probably still hidden. I don't know where they're at. It's been one of those kind of things that I don't kind of like, and I like to explore different things. I don't think I get set on a thing for a while.
You like, that's cool. Be curious, right? You're constantly curious. Mm-hmm. That was the, all right. What about on a rainy day? What do you like to do?
A rainy day. If I'm at home, I get just having the opportunity to spend time with my wife. We may start watching a show and we go through the whole thing on a Saturday. Sometimes I also actually like to spend time some just kind of reading, just kind of seeing what's out there, what's next. I hate it when it's raining because that means I cannot play golf.
And that was going to be my last question. I know you enjoy golf. What's your favorite course?
Pebble Beach in California.
Pebble Beach, yeah?
Yeah, there's no better place.
My brother-in-law is going. He might have either just gone or he's going. He's very excited. So is that good? Yeah?
It's fun. It's the first time that you play it. I think it's just that stage fright that you get really nervous. If you happen to go for a second time and so on, it's like then you start enjoying it. But the first time, it's a little bit of a nerve-wracking, but the place is amazing. And you get to enjoy 4+ hours just walking the course. And you don't really care about your score. Just the place itself, it's amazing.
That is awesome. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Luis, I want to thank you for all of your insights, great advice, great topics of conversation. And, you know, it's always interesting because a lot of the guests I've met or know, even outside of the industry, but I always learn something about them. And I learned a lot about you today. So I thank you for that. Do you have any closing words or anything you want to part with here?
Again, thank you for this opportunity. I truly enjoy having this kind of conversations. Every time that I have a conversation like this, like you said, you learn. I learned from, obviously, from somebody like you, but it's also important for me to learn about myself and kind of get, sometimes there's questions or things that I had never thought about it, or it's been a while since I had that thought in my head, and it sparked some curiosity, some optimism on my end to try to find better ways of doing things that I've been working on. And I had a couple of thoughts about this conversation that I'm going to bring back to my day-to-day conversation with my staff.
Awesome. Good. Good to hear that. Thank you all for the listening, and we'll include any resources we mentioned in the show notes and keep an eye out for our next episode.
I'll see you next time, Eric.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Building Better Futures. The show notes include links to any resources mentioned in today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.